What do you think you would have done if you lived in Nazi Germany leading up to and during World War II? Would you have stayed completely silent? Would you have hidden your Jewish neighbors in your attic? Or would you have turned them into the Nazis? Why do we give up our freedom for the thought of being better than everyone else?
Welcome to the Word World Podcast. I'm Dean.
I'm Carrie.
And Carrie's going to give a shout out to a listener.
Autumn M. In case we have more than one Autumn M, you're the one that sent us an email recently about a topic suggestion that you have a personal tie to. And I did respond to your email, so you might want to go look at my response. But also, so coincidentally, I just found out about the topic that you talked about, like, within a week of getting your email.
Are you not going to say what the topic is?
No.
Okay.
But I think it's a great idea, and I did put it on my list, Okay. And now it's kind of moved up to the top of my list.
Right.
And it's something you have never heard of, Dean.
Okay, perfect. I like this.
Surprisingly enough.
Yes.
So, are we ready to go into this one?
Let's do it. Carrie's going to tell us a story about a true story that happened in these United States of America, and it has, you know, kind of disappeared from history.
Yeah, I don't.
I remember hearing
about this.
Semi-recently, it had, I think, a documentary or something like that about Actually, a long time ago, it had one. And then semi-recently, it had another. But in between, it's not as well-known as I think it should be.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty remarkable story.
I think it's a little bit odd that we didn't hear about this when we were in school.
That's true. Everyone should.
Well, I know, going back to my little teaser, what do you think you would have done if you lived? Everybody thinks they would have been the hero that stood up to the Nazis and, you know, did the right thing. You know, of course, I count myself in that group. I hope I would, but I honestly don't know.
Yeah.
And I think I'm immune to propaganda and all that kind of stuff now. But as we know, a lot of people in this country here are not.
Yes. And I mean, I like to think that I would too. And indeed, in high school, I kind of did both ways. There were some times where I kind of followed the crowd, but there were other times where I was the only one in the room who would take a stand on something. So I kind of was in both those camps at times. But if something's serious, if your life is on the line, God knows.
Oh, I know. And that's kind of what the difference is in this situation. But so here we'll go into it. A young high school teacher at Cubberly High School in Palo Alto, California.
Cubberly?
Cubberly.
Okay.
Why?
I went to a Cubberly Elementary School in Long Beach, California when I was very, very, very young.
Oh, it was named after some person.
It's
P. Cubberly High School.
Yeah. Interesting.
I don't know who it was.
Okay.
But anyway, this is in Palo Alto in 1967. Well, this teacher found out just what many of his students most likely would have done if they had been alive during Nazi Germany.
Yeah.
Because he was a teacher of a class called something like Contemporary World History. Palo Alto, for those of you who don't know, is kind of like a tech center in Northern California now.
Yeah.
In the 60s, it was probably upper middle class.
Yeah.
It's kind of what
Stanford University is. So it always would have had that going for it as a major employer and tend to have a lot of smart folks because you have a lot of the academics there. And also back then they could afford to live nearby. They couldn't anymore.
And because of their proximity to Stanford University, it was somewhat of like a liberal school, and they kind of allowed more experimental teaching techniques and things like that. So it was probably a very fun school to go to, and it was also known as a very good school, which I'm sure all the schools in Palo Alto were very good schools. But this young teacher, he was only 25 years old.
Wow.
His name is Ron Jones. He got his job teaching at Cubberly right from getting his master's at Stanford. One thing I read said he had been there since 1965. Another thing I read said this was his first year of teaching.
What year was it?
67.
67, okay.
So he was also an actor and a fiction writer.
Oh.
So he was kind of a creative himself. They were sophomores in this history class. The way it went, like when I was in ninth grade was high school. This school, 10th grade was your first year in high school. So it was these kids, they were about 15. It was their first year at Cubberly High. And they all probably knew each other pretty well. They all came from the same feeder elementary schools. or middle schools. junior high schools back in those days. They were junior high. Mm-hmm. There were about 1,200 students in 10th and 11th and 12th grades there. So it was a good size school. This was the late 60s. And what was going on, Dean, around 1967 in the United States?
I'm going to go Vietnam War. Well, correct. Actually, not in the United States, but it was a big deal.
Very big deal. Around 1,000 soldiers. Is it 1,000 soldiers a month or 1,000 soldiers a day?
What?
Being killed.
Not 1,000 a day now.
Okay.
Maybe 1,000 a month.
It must have been 1,000 a month. So huge deal. I'm sure it was on the news every night.
Yeah.
And these kids were seeing this. And also, like, hippie counterculture stuff was kind of starting. Around then.
You're right. But it was already entrenched. It was starting to grow and become not mainstream, but become really widespread.
But also, especially, you know, Palo Alto isn't that far from San Francisco, which
that's true.
Was kind of the heart of the hippie stuff, right, at the time. So this is what's going on. But it was also the kind of school where the boys had to wear shirts with collars and slacks, and the girls had to wear dresses. You know, most of the kids, especially the first year students there, they had to have short haircuts and stuff like that. So that's what the school looked like, even if the hippie stuff was going on outside of the school. I'm sure it came to the school very shortly after this, but that's what was going on. And Mr. Jones was young, and I'm sure he considered himself to be pretty hip.
His hair was almost to his ear, so he was kind of a reb.
He had the very short haircut. And he liked a method of teaching called experiential teaching. Mm. And it was kind of becoming popular at the time, where you develop simulations and set up situations where students can actually experience something instead of just hearing a teacher lecture about something, which I think is a pretty good idea. Yeah. He would bring in special guests to talk to his students, like a communist, a Klansman. Where did he find a Klansman?
What?
In Palo Alto, California?
Oh, you might be surprised. Did he bring his own hood? Or did he have to supply a hood for him?
He also brought a member of the American Nazi Party to speak to the kids. Yeah.
Damn.
Very interesting. He had three periods of contemporary world history class that year. And this was, I think, like late March, early April 1967. And he was teaching Germany just before World War II. Mm. And a student brought up a question about how Germans were able to... How did Germans just allow all this stuff to happen, you know, all around them? And what did they do about it, kind of thing? And so he thought, I don't know, that's a really good question.
It's a great question for 2025 United States, too.
Mm-hmm.
And we're looking back at 2035. We'll wonder, how did that happen?
Yeah. Well, this was 67. And if you think about it, it's not that long after World War II. So it should be much more recent history to them than it would be now.
Yeah, their parents,
could have fought.
Could have, yeah. Yeah, their parents could have, because like you said, they're 15 years old now, so they're all born like early 50s. Yeah, their parents, many of their parents probably did fight in World War II.
So when this kid brought up that question, it was a Friday. So Mr. Jones went home over the weekend and thought about how he was going to teach on Monday. So we're going to call Monday day one.
Day one.
When the kids got to class.
You know what the actual date was? You said, I think it was April or?
It was late March, early April. Okay. There are conflicting reports on what the actual dates of this were.
Okay.
But for sure, that's around the time that
it was. Which is, given how consequential this was and how amazing that this happened in a real American high school in the 1960s, you'd think it would have created a much bigger splash than it did at the time. It really didn't.
Well, news doesn't travel. Travel as fast.
Nowadays, this would have been...
Would have been recording it.
Yes.
But even
without that, it still would have been just an absolutely massive story.
Yeah, definitely. So anyway, when the kids got to school, they noticed Mr. Jones was kind of acting out of character. Usually he was very smiley, very friendly with the kids. And when they got there, he wasn't smiling. The room was kind of dark. Mm-hmm. And he was playing like Wagnerian music, which I think is just kind of like moody instrumental. And the chairs, which he would often change up the way the chairs were arranged. He would put them in different groups and he would move them to the outsides of the classroom. And, you know, he sounds like that kind of teacher where he would get there, you would get there and every day something would be different. Well, this day, all the chairs were arranged in rows, like all neatly together. So there were like four or five rows of chairs or desks and chairs. And the students were told they were going to do an experiment, and those who went along with it would all get an A. And those who didn't, well, you know, one student said it was kind of like an intimidating fill in the blank. But then he explained active party members.
These days it'd be those who didn't get a B plus. Great inflation. Sorry, go ahead.
Active party members would get an A. Passive party members would get a C. And he talked about revolution. If there was a revolution and it was not successful, you'd get an F.
If you started the revolution?
I'm not really sure. We'll talk about this a little bit later, but if there was revolution, you would get an F. And on the chalkboard, he wrote strength through discipline. And then he did a lecture about discipline and how important it is and the advantages of it in athletics and things like painting and ballet dancing and even science. He said, quote, "The power of the will, the exchange of physical hardships for superior mental and physical facilities, the ultimate triumph." So he's basically talking about how you got to work hard, you got to sacrifice, you got to, you know, whatever.
It's a little more than that.
Be very, very disciplined.
It's very kind of that sort of rugged individualist kind of a thing, but on steroids. Kind of.
Maybe. And then he went on to talk about...
Harry dismisses my analogy, but that's a...
Proper sitting posture.
Oh.
Which is just weird.
That is weird. Well, yeah, really? Because they didn't they do a lot of that? Didn't they have kids put books on their heads and shit like that?
I don't know. They did public high schools.
I don't know. Maybe not.
With girls during the girls' version of gym class or whatever. Yeah. I mean,
they need to walk straight.
He said the proper posture for focusing and learning is you have to start with your feet flat on the floor, your hands placed flat across the small of your back to force a straight alignment of the spine and kind of clasp your hands back there. And then he says there, you know, so students were, he told them to go ahead and do this. And he said, there, can't you breathe more easily? You're more alert. Don't you feel better? So they were supposed to lock their hands behind their backs. And so they all immediately did this.
I'm starting to become a convert. It feels good. Yeah. Okay.
While they were doing it, he would walk around the room and, you know, kind of point out like, oh, little Susie, you're doing that wrong. Billy, you got to sit up straighter and put your feet flat on the floor, stuff like that. Correct all their little flaws, and everybody, you know, trying their best to do it everything correctly. And then he would do what he called speed drills of the class, where he would have them stand up and next to their chairs. And then when he said they had to immediately sit down and assume the proper posture with their hands clasped behind their backs, feet on the floor, all of that kind of stuff. And he wanted them to be able to do it and be at attention in 15 seconds or less.
I didn't see that hard.
Well, he made them concentrate on the feet being parallel and flat, ankles locked. I don't know what that means. Because then your feet aren't flat. Knees bent at 90 degree angles.
Okay, well now.
Hands flat and crossed against the back. Spine straight, chin down, head forward.
And a little nitpicky now.
Also did noise drills in which talking was allowed only to be shown as a distraction. So that meant at all other times, everybody had to be completely silent. And then he had students go outside, everybody leave the classroom. And then when he said so, everybody had to go in the classroom as quickly as possible, get in their seats and be in the proper sitting at attention posture. And he said the first time they did it, it was like utter chaos. Everybody was bumping into each other and they were knocking the desks out of alignment and all that kind of stuff. And he just, okay, go back outside, do it again. And he had them do it over and over again. And because he said, you know, you can do it better. You can do it quicker. Let's do it better. So he had them do it repeatedly until they could do it smoothly. Everybody could get into the classroom smoothly and quickly. And, you know, everybody in their chairs, face forward, at attention. And
is everybody just going along with this? Or is anybody saying, I thought this was a history class.
Well, everybody's going along with it. So finally he's satisfied and he says, good, okay. That was good. I'm satisfied with that. And then one kid said, no, I think we can do it better.
Oh, what
I think we can
shit.
Do it faster. I know.
There's no way he didn't get beat up after school that day.
So he said, okay, you know, get up, go outside and do it again. They got it down to 5 seconds.
Oh my God.
They could all go inside sitting down.
I mean, yeah. Thanks to Kenneth. Shit.
He also announced some new rules going forward. They could no longer call him Ron or whatever they wanted to. He insisted on them addressing him as Mr. Jones. They had to sit at attention with that good posture. They must have pencils and paper for note-taking. Didn't they always have to have paper and pencils?
Like, man, it's in my head. Ron, come on, man. I got
Maybe.
This.
When they were answering a question or speaking, he insisted that they stand next to their desk, and they always had to start their answer with Mr. Jones.
Mr. Jones.
Be very respectful, and he wanted them to answer questions in 3 words or less.
What?
He must not have been asking very detailed questions.
No, he could not have been.
And he would make kids repeat their answers or, you know, change them if they were not given to his standards over and over again, to the point
really?
That it seemed like the way they were answering was more important than what their answer actually was. And students actually were being rewarded for making an effort at answering or asking questions. And they were given positive reinforcement by Mr. Jones for doing it in this crisp and attentive manner that he wanted. And it got to the point where soon lots of kids, even kids who didn't normally speak up and answer questions in class, were answering questions in class.
In 3 words. It's not that hard.
Three words or
less. Yeah. How was your summer? Bitchin'. That's all it was.
But so there was much more participation in the class because, you know, normally there's always those few teachers' pets or the smarties in the class who are answering every question and dominating discussions and everything like that.
Don't make fun of us. We actually in high school, no.
Yeah.
No, it was not
well,
me.
Probably in history class. So you probably had a couple classes where you were that kid.
That's true.
So kids who didn't normally participate very much were all of a sudden participating, but also the quality of the answers was getting better. It was like people were listening better and kids were actually seemed to be learning more than they had, especially the kids who weren't the top students. And it seemed like the students who didn't normally speak were getting support for even trying, even if they didn't get the right answer. They still had more confidence to try to answer a question than they had before, which is kind of positive.
Yeah.
Which
in
was
a warped way.
Which was very interesting to him because it's not what he expected. He thought his loosey-goosey, hip, young teacher, you know, letting the kids call him Ron and kind of direct their learning themselves was a more effective way of teaching.
Yeah. Well, depends on what you think the goal of teaching is. If it's to get crisp answers,
you're right.
That's one thing. If it's to impart knowledge and understanding and critical thinking, maybe
but,
not.
But like I said, it seemed like the kids who weren't learning very well before now all of a sudden were.
Yeah. You know, honestly, I've always thought that it is like, it is, it's somewhere in between.
Correct.
Because, you know,
so too.
Little shits who are yelling at the teacher and doing this, you're not helping. And that was me. That was me a lot. I was a jokester quite often. I'm sure I was disruptive, and I'm sure I probably made people in my class learn less. So for all you out there,
Dean's apologizing.
I'm apologizing.
Well, you know, he was shocked because he said, here I was enacting an authoritarian learning environment, and it seemed very productive. And so he thought, well, so then he started thinking like, well, how far can I push this? Because he only thought he was going to do this for one day. The next day, he comes to class. He walks into the classroom, and the kids are already there, all sitting in their chairs, at attention, face forward, not talking, waiting for him to arrive. And like you said, he didn't expect this to keep going that day. So he thought, they seem to be willing to continue with this. So he thought, I'll just keep going. He didn't have a plan.
So spur of the moment, he's going, okay, day two, lesson plan. Let me make it up as I go.
And so he now, actually isn't sure. Are they just playing along to be goofy or are they really taking it seriously? He didn't know at that point. And so he thought, I'll just figure something out and see how it goes.
So far, he has not said anything like, this is experiential teaching. I mean, they must, since he did have the history, though, they probably assumed, and these are smart kids for the most part, I'm sure. So they probably did. He's doing one of his experiential teaching things.
Probably.
He's just doing it in a different way than he has in the past.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you're right. So they were probably thinking, let's see what he's doing. Mm-hmm. What's the point of all of this?
Yeah.
But so since the previous day, he wrote strength through discipline on the board.
Yeah.
That was still up there. So underneath it, he wrote strength through community.
Oh, I thought you were saying the Jews did it is what he wrote.
And so this time on day two, he gave a lecture about the idea of community being more important than the individual, which is why I pushed back a little bit on your rugged individuality.
It does, but I would argue that pushed back a little bit on what you told me he was teaching him on day one. This seems a little bit counter to that.
But discipline?
Yeah, and the way he was teaching it.
Yeah,
The will and things like that.
Yeah.
That kind of thing is usually associated with, you know, in individualism. You know, you have the willpower.
And competition and all that kind of stuff.
And whereas community is a little bit, is a different ethic, ethos.
Well, he lectured that community is that bond between individuals who work and struggle together, like, you know, barn raising with your neighbors.
Oh,
and
so he's Amish.
Feeling like you're a part of something that's beyond yourself, right? You're part of a movement or a team or a cause. Okay. And then he had them whisper and chant together.
Well, okay, now it's getting a little culty.
Strength through community. Strength through discipline.
That's what
strength through community. Yeah. And he would start it. He would bring two kids up to the front and have them do it. And then
have two others, and it's like row, row, row your boat. It's around, and it goes through thing, and pretty soon it's just
actually would do stuff like that.
That'd be cool.
But at first, he started like two kids come up to the front, they start doing it, and then he'd probably like point to two other kids. You get up and join. You get up. So eventually, it's the entire class is standing up, chanting, and then stomping their feet, and then you know, getting really loud.
Teacher next door comes by. Could you guys? Shit, this looks a little culty. I'm going to back away.
And so since day two was about strength and community, he decided that the entire class was going to share a grade instead of everybody getting individual grades for their work. Hmm. So the kids would get together outside of class to do their assignments together, turn assignments in, and they would all get the same grade. So, of course, the kids who typically got C's and D's and F's thought this was great because we don't really have to do much more work, but we're going to finally get A's, right?
Now he's teaching the concept of the free rider.
Yep. But I think it also kind of gave them an incentive to try to work harder. And actually, I'm sure they were learning from the kids that they were working with, which is usually the theory behind group projects.
Yeah. Or just screwing around until the two people who gave a shit about their grade did everything and turned it in.
Well, and so then also the supposition is that the normally A students probably weren't real happy about it because now they're doing all the work and, you know, I don't know. But it still worked out where the kids who didn't normally get good grades and speak up in class were still learning and still doing well. They were speaking up and answering questions. As the class was ending on day two, he said he was creating their signature hand gesture.
Hmm.
It was a salute. That's,
okay, well.
Just for the members of their class.
Now we know where we're
going. Just for the members of their class. So he held up his hand towards his right shoulder and kind of curved his fingers into like a C shape.
Yeah.
And he said, this is like a wave. Like a wave in the ocean. And it stands for the third wave because in, I guess, surfers and beach vernacular, the third wave is the waves come in sets and the third wave is the strongest.
Uh-huh.
So they're the third wave because they're going to be the strongest.
They are.
And one of the rules is when you pass each other in the hallways, you got to give your little wave.
Oh, my God.
And when you see each other, and if you don't do the wave, you could get kicked out because it would mean you don't share the values of your new group.
Okay. All right. So I see what he's doing here. It starts out fairly innocuous and just sort of generalized.
Yeah.
But what he's doing is building an in-group, an exclusivity, a movement, and being part of something bigger than you. But really what that is, because if there's an us.
There's a them.
There has to be a them.
Yep. So day three is Wednesday. And day three was all about the meaning of action. So he basically was explaining how discipline and community are meaningless without action. So he stressed hard work and allegiance to each other would help them learn faster and better and become more accomplished. He reminded students what it felt like being in classes where competition caused some students to feel bad because they were always at the bottom, and that how, you know, when students are pitted against each other in everything from gym to reading, that, you know, they feel bad about themselves, yeah, unless they're the ones that are always winning.
Yeah.
So in this group, in the wave, they were going to be part of something and they were going to be supporting each other rather than competing against each other. So that was the whole idea about the group grades and all that kind of stuff. So then he said, okay, so for those of you, you have a choice. So for those of you who want to stay in the third wave group, great. If you don't, you can leave. Like, I don't know where they're supposed to go.
Yeah.
But he said, if you want to stay, let me know, like raise your hand or whatever he did. I'm going to give you, everybody's going to get a third wave ID card. Huh. Didn't have a plan, but he just, you know, saw a stack of index cards on his desk, probably those little 3x5 index cards. Yeah. And so he pulled those out, and on three of the cards, he had written red X's, big red X's. And so every kid wanted to stay. Yeah, every kid really wanted to stay in the group. He also realized there's more kids in this class. There are 13 extra kids in his class.
What? That people are not sneaking into a class.
That were not his students.
So yep. So kids are talking about it.
Yes. Going,
oh my God, this is Mr. Jones. Did some crazy shit yesterday. He's doing this. Uh-huh. It's really cool. It's boss. I don't know if the words were in the 60s. It's groovy. And so kids, so they're ditching their yes, class they're supposed to be in. They're missing yes, role there.
Yep.
And they're sneaking in. How big is the classroom? What are they doing? Sitting.
Well, there were 43 kids that day. So there's normally 30.
Yeah, okay.
So there were 13
people standing around
kids,
the walls?
Yeah, no, probably.
Okay, that'd be noticeable immediately.
I know. So he was passing out the index cards, and he told them, so most of the cards are blank.
Jeez.
And he told them, three people have an X on your card, and if you got that card, you're an informer.
Whoa.
And the job of informers is to report to him students who aren't following the rules of the third wave.
This sounds like the secret Hitler game, but much more serious.
It does. Maybe one of these students is the inventor of the secret Hitler game.
Never know.
So they had to salute when they saw other third wave students out and about on campus. They were not allowed to talk about the class with outsiders, which clearly some of them had been.
Yeah.
But
knock that off.
They weren't even really supposed to be talking about it outside of class, period, even with each other. They were not allowed to gather in groups of more than two people, even each
what?
Other, even at home, even outside of school.
That's weird.
Eventually, even though he only made three official informers, and he probably did this for each of his three classes,
okay,
or maybe there, I don't know, maybe there's only one for each class.
Or, you know, maybe.
Three total.
Okay.
But
he was doing this in all three classes,
yes,
that he was teaching.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
there'd be like 90 plus,
yes,
total.
Total.
Okay.
Yes.
Plus the extra stragglers,
yeah,
who wandered in. Okay.
So he had three informers. There were way more than three students coming to him,
really,
and snitching on the kids who were supposedly not living up to the values of the third wave.
How many of those kids got stitches? It seems
we'll
like
find out.
A lot.
We'll find out. So the kids, you know, they got their plain white index card. They started decorating their own, making their own little third wave insignia, you know,
yeah,
graphics and stuff, and doing what they thought the third wave insignia should be.
Well, at least they're keeping that artsy funk going,
yeah,
on. That's good.
Well, they weren't all super artsy, but so to allow students to experience the whole direct action thing that he was talking about on that day, each student was given a specific assignment, and he was just making them up on the fly. It's your task to design a third wave banner. Another kid, he made responsible for stopping any student that is not a third wave member from entering the room. So basically, you're a guard. You guard the door.
So he's got bouncers.
Mm-hmm. Oh. He gave one person the assignment to by the next day, recite the name and address of every third wave member.
Oh my God. I know. I just go, you know, can I be an informer?
Can I be a guard?
I don't want to.
One person was assigned the task of training and convincing at least 20 children in the adjacent elementary school that their new sitting posture was necessary for better learning. How that kid would prove that they did that, I don't know.
Yeah, I would just go ahead. Yeah, no, I did that. I for sure did that. It's like handing out flyers. Yeah, no. I didn't just leave the entire stack on a table. I handed it everyone.
Another kid was assigned the task to read a pamphlet and report the entire contents to the class before the period ended.
Jesus. And then, he's not just cultifying them, but he's making these things hard. I wonder, why is he doing that?
I don't know.
Huh.
And then he gave everybody this one last task, and it was to give him the name and address of one reliable friend that they thought might want to join the third wave.
Interesting. Did one little kid he know had a really hot mom and said, your job is to bring me a picture of your mom naked?
No, he didn't do that.
Will do, sir.
And so it was this last task where he started letting other students into the third wave. They had to be brought in by one of the current students, and they had to agree they had to show that they knew what the rules of the group were and that they agreed to adhere to the rules of the group.
Now it's getting a little Masonic, a little, isn't it? A little, not cult, but.
Oh, very cult-y.
Very culty. A little bit is culty, but also, I guess, you know, those kinds of groups are a little culty too, aren't they?
Yeah.
Even though they became so mainstream, the Masons, and they just, would just do crazy shit. You know.
I mean, we still don't know what the Masons were up to.
Yeah, we kind of do.
One girl named Sherry. Mm-hmm. It's always that girl named Sherry.
Sherry. Was she the doll? Was she the bee who said, I think you can do better?
No, she wasn't.
Okay.
She didn't agree with all the rules.
Oh, Sherry's a rebel.
She particularly didn't like the restrictions on them talking to each other or talking to other students. And she thought that wasn't so cool. So she stood up in class and asked, when are we going to be allowed to talk about how we feel about this thing that you're doing and our feelings about the third wave?
It's day three, right?
Day three.
So she's already getting tired. She's been, I'm on board. I like the whole experiential teaching thing, Ron. I'm sorry, Mr. Jones. But
when are we going to talk about it?
What's the point of this? I know there's a point coming up. Tell us the point.
No, he told her, you're banished.
Nice.
You go to the library every class period for the rest of the semester.
Oh my God. So he kicked her out of class.
Kicked her out of class.
What about her grade?
I don't know. Presumably she's getting an F.
That's what I would think. And I mean, that's serious. These are high school grades. I'm going to go to Stanford.
And you know, Sherry's not an F
student.
It's not
funny, Mr. Jones. No, no.
She felt horrible and she felt very intimidated because he also had told them that he would ruin their reputation with the other teachers.
Wow.
So there would be ramifications beyond just that history class.
And put out rumors that she's a slut.
So for that day, she went to the library. I'm assuming she was escorted by a guard or something. And so the next day, she went back to the library because she was banished from class. And the librarian asked her, what are you doing
here? So day four, she's in the library.
Why do you keep coming to the library? You need to go to class.
Yeah.
And she finally told her why she was there.
She snitched. She wasn't supposed to talk about it. Yeah. But I guess she's not. They kicked her out.
Yeah, she's not part of it anymore. The librarian was horrified.
Yeah.
She told her she was born in Nazi Germany. And this was very distressing to her.
Of all people, she got Mrs. Goldstein in the library. That's.
And she said, you can't stand for this, young lady. You got to do something about it. Sherry agreed with the librarian.
Librarians are heroes.
She didn't, Well, if that librarian was a hero, she would have done something about it. But also, presumably, the librarian thought, oh, this is wacky Mr. Jones. He's doing something unorthodox, maybe. But
at the same time, I don't want you in my goddamn library. She still, this sounds a little Nazi-ish.
Yes, she still didn't like it. And so, you know, she may have just been kind of spurring Sherry on. You got to go do something. So Sherry agreed with her. I do have to do something about it. I just don't know what to do. So that night she went home. She told her parents what was going on. They agreed that she should do something about it. And so she thought about it. And so she decided she was going to make anti-third wave posters.
Nice.
And post them around the campus.
Fight the power.
So that night she made a bunch of posters. her groovy dad drove her to campus at night.
Really? And broke onto campus
so
and
that,
set up posters.
Well, I'm assuming there weren't locked gates. This is 1967.
Yeah.
And it's all of the hallways are outdoors because this is Northern California. And so they didn't have to like break into buildings or anything.
There should have been anyway, but go.
So she just put up all the posters all around the outside hallways of the school. And then the next morning when she got to school, you know, she was all excited to see, you know, what was going on.
You left at the part where they shit on the principal's desk. This is not how insurrections are done.
And this was Sherry Dean.
Okay, you're right. It's just sharing.
She was no breaking and entering. She wasn't going to become a criminal.
That's my bet.
For this.
Well, they'll get just get.
So by the time she gets to school.
Get pardoned. Don't worry about it.
What'd you say?
Just get pardoned.
Nothing to worry about. By the time she gets to campus the next morning, all the posters have been taken down.
Ah, that was fat. So they got there early.
Presumably.
Oh, my God.
So the next night, she did it again.
Damn.
But this time, when her dad took her, they brought a ladder so that she could put the posters up higher so that presumably kids couldn't get them down.
Don't tell me someone fell and broke their leg.
No, okay. But the next time after that, some of the posters managed to stay up, but she said they managed to get a lot down. They probably like jumped or stood on each other's shoulders or whatever.
Or they got that stick with the hook that you got the map down from that was rolled up to the top of the wall, something like that.
Sherry was doing her best, though.
I applaud Sherry.
But so the third wave group started calling the quote-unquote group that was putting up the anti-third wave posters, the Breakers.
The Breakers.
So it was like there was an entire group of students that was doing
the wave.
This. Yep.
That's a pretty cool name to give them if you're against them. You would think it'd be something a little more negative than that.
And so in response to the Breakers posters, the third wave kids started making their own posters and putting them up around the school. And the teacher, Mr. Jones, had now said, okay, now you guys need to pass out flyers about third wave to other students. So now he's telling them to actively recruit other kids. He had them set up a table outside of the classroom where he wanted the kids to talk to other students about the third wave and consider joining. Mm. So, you know, like a kid would walk by and say, hey, you want to join third wave?
Want to sign a petition?
So they were supposed to recruit with the message of strength through unity. And that's kind of all they would say to kids because I don't think they really completely understood what they were doing. So one kid...
But they knew they had a quota and they were going to get that shit signed up for Mr. Jones.
One kid walked by the table. Hey, you want to join the third wave? What's really cool. And he said, you know, there was a big poster behind him saying strength through unity. And the kid said, it's about strength through unity. And he goes... Okay, but what's it all really about?
Yeah.
Strength through unity. That's all they could say. He's like, nah, I'm not interested.
Hard pass.
So one of the kids at the table stands up and gets his binder and says, okay, what's your name? Like, he's going to record his name because he doesn't want to join the third wave.
Oh, God. Now they're getting all Ceausescu. They're getting Romanian Stasi kind of.
And the kid that didn't want to join said, who the heck are you? I'm not giving you my name.
First of all, Kevin, you know me. I'm in your second period class. A. B.
And
you.
He said, because now it's two boys on one. And he's like, am I going to get in a fight in the hallway over this stupid group that I don't want to join?
The only reason I don't want to join is because you won't tell me what it is.
So they stopped short of getting in an actual fight. And then there was this one kid who probably didn't have a lot of friends, wasn't a member of any group or anything.
Yeah, he's going
to
join.
He heard about it and he really wanted to join.
You think?
He was desperate to join. He would go to the class and say, hey, can I join? They would never let him join.
Wow.
So like it's like if you're too desperate to join, we don't want you.
That's actually a little surprising because most of those groups will let anyone join. The more desperate, the better because they're more controllable.
Typically. That is kind of horrible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
at that point, I think Mr. Jones was just drunk with power. Being kind of
Mr. Jones was drunk with power.
Yeah.
And he admits it.
Okay.
There was a kid named Robert who Mr. Jones knew. He wasn't in that class, but he knew he was a loner. He didn't have a group of friends. At lunchtime, sometimes he would come sit in Mr. Jones' class because he was always eating all by himself. So he kind of saw what was going on, saw the kids doing their little third wave salute and everything like that. And one day he just kind of sidled up to Mr. Jones. This must have been lunch hour or whatever. and started following him around. And Mr. Jones said, "Hey, Robert," his name was Robert, "what are you doing?
You're super creepy."
And Robert said, "I'm your bodyguard." He did the salute and just started following him around, followed him into the teacher's lounge.
Well, that's not okay.
And the English teacher said, "Hey, you're a student. You don't belong here. Get out. This is a teacher's lounge."
He said, "Shut up, bitch. I'm a bodyguard and for the supreme leader."
Robert said, "I'm not a student. I'm a bodyguard."
Jesus.
Yeah.
The problem is that Robert is probably a little nerd, a wispy, thin little, you know, spaghettini arm nerd. He's not going to be a very good bodyguard.
Yeah, I get the feeling he was not a little kid.
He's a big unpopular thug.
Well, I don't think he was a thug.
There's only two stereotypes I know.
So. Apparently. So other kids are seeing this. Now, what's this going on? It seems really cool. Mm-hmm. Why they thought it seemed cool, I don't know, but I'm not a kid.
Yeah, I think it's the wave. And it's a pretty cool symbol. It's a very cool symbol. And it's a good name. Are you part of the third wave? What? I can't talk about it.
Well, so students from other classes obviously were already starting to crash the class, but they wanted to be official members of the third wave. His classes were having standing room only.
Wow. Well, and then some.
Even kids from the upper grades, like juniors and seniors, were coming into the class. They had already taken this class. They're showing up again.
We didn't do this in this class last year for me.
It got to the point, because people were reporting all this kind of stuff to Mr. Jones, there were students from other high schools in the area that wanted to come to that school.
Oh, now they're ditching their school to get...
Well, they just wanted to come join the third wave. Okay. They probably thought it was a club or whatever. I don't know. And the reason why he was finding out about this was because all kinds of kids were coming to him and telling him about stuff that was going on.
At some point, Ron Jones going, "You know, I get to actually monetize this."
He was feeling very powerful.
Yeah.
His wife wasn't
really
as into it as he was. She told him at this point, "You need to stop this." But did he stop it?
Mm-mm.
Nope. He kept going. Kids were informing on each other.
Are we into like the second week by now, or?
No, we're still on day three.
What the? Wait, you told me we had to be at least a day four, because she didn't go to the library until day four.
Well, she went to the library on day three.
Oh.
That was day three.
This is just happening too fast.
Well,
how could that seems weird. How could communication get to other high schools that quickly? That would have to be, I mean, that just doesn't seem. And they'd have time to hear about it and then, you know, skip school the next day and come to school. That seems like...
Oh, they weren't actually coming, but they were.
Well, you said some kids were skipping their own class.
Oh,
to go
from
to that
their
class.
School, yes. Yeah. By day three, there were other kids. But that one, his first period had 13 extra kids in it. So kids were informing on each other for being revolutionary, saying things anti-third wave. Mm. And Mr. Jones would hold like mock trials in class. Mm. He would bring a kid up. "You've been accused of blah, blah, blah." And then say, "What does everybody say?" And the kids would start chanting, "Guilty. Guilty, Jesus. Guilty." And he would say, "You're guilty. You're banished from the class."
Oh, man. I think it should be more of some kind of physical, altercation of some sort. There's got to be something a little more high stakes than going to the library.
And having to go to the library?
Yeah.
Well, and then presumably you're also going to get an F.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
How many kids got booted out with these little mock trials?
I don't know.
But more than one? More than just Shelly?
Sherry. As we know, Sherry's out of the group.
Yeah.
She was banished on day two or three or whatever.
Bolshevik.
She said that she didn't consider herself part of the movement anymore. And she had a friend who was. And when they passed each other in the hallway, her friend did the little salute. And when Sherry didn't return it, her friend got super upset. And she said she wouldn't talk to her. She wouldn't even acknowledge her existence from that point on.
Good God.
Yeah. Some of the boys in the class started, instead of saying strength through discipline, they were calling it STD, which STD wasn't a thing
for
sexually transmitted disease at the time. And one of them just jokingly said, "No, it means stronger than dirt."
Stronger than dirt?
Because that was a laundry detergent slogan at the time. I think it was for Tide. And he was just being joking, STD, stronger than dirt. And so the next day when he went to class, Mr. Jones called him to the top, said, "It's been reported that you've been saying STD stands for stronger than dirt." And that is, basically you're making fun of the movement or whatever.
Good Lord. Good thing he didn't say sexually transmitted disease.
And he knew the friend that he had been, they were joking about it together. And that friend, he said, was just sitting in class staring straight ahead. Wouldn't look at him, wouldn't make eye contact. It's like, my friend just turned me in.
Dude, I know it was you. You're the only person in the room.
So in addition to Robert, the other guards were from the car club.
So again, not part of the class?
I guess not.
Okay.
They had a car club at this school.
That's weird.
And so they would also follow Mr. Jones around, and they would be guarding the doors when he asked them to and stuff like that. So now we're going to day four. Doesn't it seem like this has been going on for 6 months?
Yes, it does. I can't believe this is day four. Makes
no sense. Thursday, Mr. Jones goes to school and his classroom has been ransacked. All the posters have been torn from the walls, all the banners torn down, and people, you know, kids were talking about what happened, what happened.
Ooh, the rebels.
Yeah, they were thinking it was the breakers.
The guerrilla war.
Which
okay.
Sherry started to get real worried. Yeah. Like, are they going to accuse me of doing this and come after me? It wasn't her. And so that day in his first class, there's 80 students.
Wow. And I mean, okay, at this point, you would think the school authorities would be involved. Say, no, they can't fit. This is a room for 30. People are in the hall. You're making too much noise. And
no, they were making zero noise.
I still.
It was
they couldn't
were
physically fit.
Very
this is a
orderly.
Fire issue at this point.
Yeah, well, it absolutely was. So he turned off the lights and he locked the doors and told the kids to stand.
So now it's much more of a fire issue. Good
he
job.
Held mock assassinations.
What?
And he made three students. He mock assassinated them made them be escorted to the library by the guards. And they were three girls who had questioned the experiment.
All girls so far, that at least that you've mentioned, have been the ones who have questioned this experiment.
Correct.
Experiment.
They were told the guards were told, take them to the library, make sure they stay there today, and make sure they go back there tomorrow.
Yeah.
And they have to stay at the library on Friday as well.
So almost seems like you're trying to imply that we should have more women in power. That's just crazy. How do you explain Karens?
Well,
okay. Well,
the same way there's one or two good men,
I suppose,
in the world. He told them this isn't a game, that it wasn't just their class that was doing this, that it was teachers all over the country doing the same thing. There were over 1,000 sophomore history classes in the country, that the third wave was a nationwide program to find students who are willing to fight for political change in this country because they weren't happy with the way things were going, and they were going to get together and form a third political party.
It's getting really serious now.
And there's no internet, so the kids couldn't whip out their phones and Google it and
see what was going on.
Yeah,
I have a cousin in New York.
They kind of had to believe him. He said that these teachers were recruiting and training a youth brigade capable of showing the nation a better society through discipline, community pride, and action. And that if they could change the way their school was run, that they could change factories and stores and universities and all kinds of institutions to run better because discipline, community, and unity. Or
third wave youth.
And action.
Anytime the word youth is applied to an organization, that's always a red flag.
And that they were a selected group of young people chosen to help this cause. So he said, if you will stand up and display what you have learned in the past 4 days, we will change the destiny of this nation. So this was, like we talked about, following the assassination of John F. Kennedy in Vietnam and all that kind of stuff. They were realizing we can't trust our government. We don't want to go die in a couple of years when we're drafted.
This is actually the early days of that. Mm-hmm. That really, 68, 69 is when that really, after the RFK and Martin Luther King assassinations and after, you know.
Yeah, that hadn't happened yet. But
a lot of the media exposed a lot of the lies and me lie and that kind of thing. So this is very
leading
early. This is when it's just starting to the trust in your government just barely starting to crack.
Yeah. So he told them the next day, on Friday, the fifth day, we're going to have a rally, like an assembly. And
so this is Friday. This is 1 week.
Our new party leader will be announced and he will give an address, you know, he will address the group. One kid in the class happened to have a magazine. It was Time Magazine. And he opened it up and there was a 2-page ad and he held it up and he said, hey, Mr. Jones, is this what you're talking about? And it said the third wave is coming.
What?
Over a 2-page spread in Time magazine.
It must have been a Time ad, like an advertisement for something.
Yeah. It was actually, Mr. Jones said, 100% coincidental.
Yeah, weird.
That it was an ad for a lumber company's new product.
Oh, my God.
Called the third wave, whatever that was. So he said, it's all set for tomorrow. Go to the small auditorium 10 minutes before noon. Be seated and be ready to display the discipline, community, and pride you have learned. Don't talk to anyone about this. This rally is for members only. And then he left the room. The kids were still in the room.
Not for you, Sherry.
He made this all up on the fly.
Yeah.
He didn't have a plan for what he was going
to
do.
He didn't have permission to use the auditorium.
He was going to have to go home and figure it out. One girl got up after he left the room and she tried to convince the other kids. This is bullshit.
Really?
I think she probably said. No, she probably didn't. Bull crap is probably what
bull
she said.
Crap. She's a nice girl.
And she said, she's not going. This is fake. You know, this is weird. Nobody would listen to her or join her except one girl.
By the way, Todd, that's a lumber commercial you have there. I don't know if you noticed read the print, but.
But I'm sure they would say that's okay. Their.
Oh, I see. Like a code.
Camouflaging or whatever.
Okay.
Only one person would stand behind her. And who do you think that person was?
Shelley.
No, Sherry is already gone.
She's Shelley to me. She'll always be Shelley to me, but she's already kicked, so she's gone, so it's not her. Who did I think that one person was?
No, this is, her name's Jeannie.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, the girl that did it, I think, was Alyssa.
Okay, whatever.
So, and they had been told, you can't talk to anybody about this. Well, one kid did talk to their guidance counselor about it.
A snitch.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the counselor went and talked to Mr. Jones about it. Mm-hmm. I don't think the counselor was reporting them to Mr. Jones, yeah. But that's in essence what happened. And that student got booted from the third wave.
Nice. Mr. Jones knows how to work.
So there, you know, kids, no, we can't talk about this.
Yeah.
We've
seen the repercussions.
Yeah, we can't break the rules. Mm-mm. The principal later said he did get a couple phone calls from parents were, you know, kind of concerned about what was going on. He explained to them, oh, it's just a lesson Mr. Jones is doing in totalitarianism.
You know that, Mr. Jones.
It's fine. They're learning.
It's a progressive school.
Exactly. So he knew he had approved Mr. Jones doing something.
Yeah, but he didn't know the details.
But he didn't know. And Mr. Jones, because Mr. Jones hadn't planned a week-long thing, and he wasn't giving the principal any updates about what was going on. I mean, this principal had to be pretty not paying attention.
No, I know. To 80 students.
Yeah, have seen what was going on. But
well, because Mr. Jones is planning a coup. He's plotting against this principal, I think.
Well, Thursday night, one kid went home for dinner and he said his family always talked about politics and what was going on. So they had like very open communication in his family. And he was being a little bit weird because he knew he couldn't talk about it with his parents. So he wasn't kind of not talking at all.
Was he forming his mashed potatoes into the shape of a wave?
Probably. So his parents said, hey, what's going on? You're acting a little bit weird. He just said, well, maybe you guys shouldn't go to work tomorrow.
What?
Something big is going to happen.
Wow.
Or actually, if you do go to work, just make sure that around noon you can turn on a TV because there's going to be a big news story around noon tomorrow. So he bought it.
Damn.
Hook, line, and sinker.
It's like if you were going to go see the president at Dealey Plaza in Dallas, I would say don't go near the grassy knoll. That's all I'm going to say.
So just day five.
I've got a timeline just in case. I mean, obviously you assume that, but go ahead.
At noon, the kids are all supposed to report. Or a little bit before noon, remember he said, get there about 10 minutes early. The assembly room is full.
Wow.
And kids actually started arriving more like around 11:30. There's about 200 kids in the room.
Yeesh.
So that's like 110 more than there are kids in his history classes. The lights were off. The room was quiet. He had car club guards stationed at the doors. There was media there, photographers and reporters taking pictures, you know, snapping pictures of everybody, talking to kids, you know, asking for interviews and quotes and stuff like that, presumably from area newspapers and magazines. But
Adult newspapers.
Adults. Like, okay. They were adults.
Really?
They
so
were.
So they've heard about it.
No, they were Mr. Jones' friends.
Oh.
Posing as photographers.
And Bob reporters. Johnson, CBS News. Hello. Yeah. Okay.
So Mr. Jones goes to the front of the room. And he said all of the kids were sitting at ease, which is basically with their hands clasped behind their backs, at attention. Why that's called at ease, I don't know.
Yeah.
And he said, let's show everybody the extent of our training, meaning the everybody in the world through the reporters who are going to write stories about this. And they
Did anybody build like a fake camera out of wood? They painted it like, and they're rolling it, like they're spinning it. And no?
He devised this the night before, so no, they didn't have time. But so the students start chanting, strength through unity, strength through discipline, strength through action. Jeez,
we're so proud.
Starting out quiet, getting louder and louder and louder.
I like that.
Yeah, this is their show for the media. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he puts a halt to that and he says, okay, now we're going to wait for the party leader to come give his address on the TV. So he turns, there's a TV at the front. And he turns it on, and there's nothing on the screen yet. It's just like the static that existed.
Back
kids nowadays
day.
Probably have no idea what it looks like.
But snow.
The static is called snow. And then he leaves the room, and the TV continues to just play static. After this only went on for a couple of minutes, but the guards leave, and then nothing happens. So all of the photographers and reporters leave. So the kids are kind of sitting there like, what the heck is going on? They're all confused. And so for a little while, they're just sitting there staring at, snow on a TV. And then one kid says his mind flipped. And he's getting the whole Nazi Germany analogy.
Okay.
And we're not the Nazis. We're the Jews. We are like Jews lured to a gas chamber.
No.
And we're trapped.
Oh my God.
I'm sure he didn't think they were going to be murdered.
Wait, does he say anything about this? Today?
No, okay. I don't think so. But in his own head, he's making the connections. But kids did start to panic.
Yeah.
And I'm sure other kids made the connection that because Mr. Jones was instructing guards to lock doors.
Yeah.
So they thought, we're locked in here. We're not going to be able to get out.
Oh, those tough-ass car kids, man. They got hot, rad Mustangs and shit. They're always tough.
So kids did start to panic and go to the doors as fast as they could, thinking the doors are going to be locked and we're not going to be able to get out. All of a sudden, the lights come back on. Mr. Jones flips off the TV, and then he starts whispering the slogans just to get the kids to calm down, you know? How lots of times if you whisper to kids, it means more than yelling.
It's their safety word.
Yeah.
It's strength through unity. The safety phrase.
And one kid yelled out about how there is no leader. Mr. Jones is like, that kind of thing probably. And then Mr. Jones flips on his movie projector.
Yeah.
And he had a big sheet at the front of the room behind the TV screen. And he starts showing a documentary about Nazi Germany and Hitler Youth and them, marching through the streets and saluting Hitler and basically like, this is you guys.
Did he show them Jojo Rabbit?
No, because Jojo Rabbit didn't exist. Yet.
So
once they watch that, they're thinking, oh my God, this is us. And then
they realize they are the Nazis, not the Jews.
Yes. Okay. And at the very end, it just stopped on a frame with the words, everyone must accept the blame. No one can claim they didn't in some way take part.
Except Sherry
and
a little bit of Alyssa.
Alyssa and Jeannie.
Jeannie.
So he just, at that point, he's as horrified as all the kids are. He talked to them about it and said what he had witnessed over the last week. And he said, this was written by him, and he said it was a week and a half.
Yeah.
So this is what I'm saying. So he reports it like it was day 1 through 5.
I think it lasted. It doesn't make sense. Some of it just logistically doesn't make sense unless it lasted more than a week.
And some of the students say it went into the next week. It was really more like 8 school days.
I think it was.
Some kids afterwards say it felt like it was 6 months.
Yeah.
Not just a few days.
I bet you it's closer to 2 weeks than one. And they just had a telescope.
That's very possible too. But so he told him, no, obviously there's no leader. There is no third wave movement. You guys were used and you're no better or worse than the German Nazis we have been studying, which I think is a little bit harsh.
A little bit harsh.
Because then if I was a kid, I would have said, I absolutely would not have done this, but I would have been thinking in my head, that makes you no better or worse than Hitler.
So you're Hitler, Mr. Jones?
Mr. Jones.
Put the little mustache on, dude.
Yeah. And then I would have dropped my mic and left them.
Yeah.
Classroom.
Now you wouldn't have been any of those.
Absolutely
things.
Not. No. So I might have been Sherry, though. I might not have gone along with it.
I think you would have probably quietly not liked it, but just kind of did the bare minimum, you know, probably. That's my guess. When you're 15 years old.
I 100% would have talked to my mom about it.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and your mom in between smokes and reading a bad novel would have gone, no, that sounds great.
People were shocked. People were crying. Some kids were so just like devastated, they couldn't even get up and walk out of the room. Mm-hmm. They were paralyzed. They were taking it very seriously. Mm-hmm. They didn't like, oh, ha ha, Mr. Jones, what a funny joke you played on us. They were extremely upset by what they did. And when you realize what you were doing was only for a grade.
Yeah, you know, not for to get a little, you know.
Not to save your life.
Yeah.
Or to save your family's
lives. Or to take
lives.
On an authoritarian in Germany. You know, everybody asks, why did they go along with it? Why did they go along with it?
Yeah, to save my family.
It was an authoritarian dictatorship.
If I didn't go along with it, it would have happened to me too.
If you didn't go along, the alternative is to do something violent, essentially, effectively, at that point. When once you lose democracy, the only real alternative is violence to regain that democracy, except, you know, some kind of external event. And that's, or something that's very bold and endangering to you. If it's not violence, it's something that's the next closest thing to it.
We're at that point now.
We're very, very close to that point for sure. Yep.
Well, the young people that I talk to are very, very close to.
To being what? Violent? No, I don't mean that. I mean
revolutionary.
I mean in terms of we're getting precipitously close to having to do something like that.
Right.
Because we are getting less and less of a democracy, more and more of an oligarchy, and more and more, and voting rights are being infringed upon every year, worse and worse, and gerrymandering and all that, and dark money and things like that are endangering our democracy.
So Mr. Jones tells some kids, go find Sherry and tell her it's
Beat
all over.
The show. Okay.
So a couple of kids go to get Sherry and they tell her it's all over. Well, at first, Sherry's like, oh shit, did they find out that I'm the Breakers? And, you know, meaning like it's all over for
all
you,
over.
Sherry. The mock assassinations are going to be real. And she was scared.
Yeah.
She didn't know what they meant by it's all. And they said, no. The whole movement's over. There is no third wave. Come on back to the classroom.
No. You're over. Wait, this is not helping. No, your life is over. No, hold on.
So that was kind of it. I'm sure he gave, you know, lectures and lessons about, you know, I hope they debriefed and talked about it.
But, I mean, by that point, though, it's a pretty big deal. The whole high school knows about it. The high school authority, the principal now knows about it, right?
Yeah.
Was there repercussions
for him? He didn't like
him?
It. The principal didn't like it. He thought it was unethical.
Yeah, it was a little bit.
That he manipulated the kids, and he's not wrong.
He essentially was using them as human experiment.
Yeah.
And you can't do that without consent.
Correct.
Although at that point there were it was much looser laws back then for that, and rules and ethics for that back then.
Yeah. Well, and Mr. Jones' career did not last.
Oh.
Also, the timing of when he was let go is not clear. Something said a year later. Something said 2 years later. Something said he was about to get tenure. How is he getting tenure if it's his first year of teaching?
Or even if it's his third or fourth year of teaching.
Yeah, so I'm not sure how he's only 25.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be more than his second.
And he got a master's degree.
Okay.
So I don't know.
Huh.
But so anyway, probably around a year or so later, he's the subject of board meetings and stuff like that. The school is a little bit liberal and progressive, but the school board is not. They're conservative. But there is one renegade old lady on the school board.
I like her already.
She liked him. She liked more progressive methods of teaching and stuff like that. But when it came down to it, she couldn't be the only one to try to, you know, she couldn't really go to bat for him because everybody wanted him gone.
Really?
Yeah. So they did fire him. The students really supported him. They were having rallies and protests and stuff like that. They wanted him to be allowed to stay. They liked him a lot, even after this. And he said he made an announcement and told the students, I'm leaving. Yeah, I'm getting fired, but I'm leaving anyway because even if I stayed, they wouldn't let me use the teaching methods that I want to use. So, you know, that would be, the fun would be done anyway. So then I told you 10 years later, he meets this guy when he's buying underwear in Berkeley. And did I tell that story?
You did not tell that story. It sounds like a fascinating story, by the way.
So 10 years later, he's in a store in Berkeley buying underwear. And a man comes up to him and says, Mr. Jones, hi. And he looks at him like, I should know this guy. He calls me Mr. Jones. He must have been a student. And then the guy does the third wave. And so Mr. Jones does it to him. He's like, oh my God, I know who you are. You're the kid, Steve, who asked the question. How could the German people,
he started it all.
He's the one that started it. Wow. So they talk to each other for like the next couple hours about the third wave and what it meant to both of them and all that kind of stuff. So this prompted Ron Jones to sit down and write it all out. Mm. So
yeah, because did it get any like real newspaper coverage at the time? I don't think it did.
I don't think so.
I don't think it got anything.
I mean, I didn't look it up, but nothing said anything about it.
I mean, the minutes of a school board meeting might briefly mention it, but it really was immediately forgotten, even though it created quite a stir.
So I think what he did was he wrote a short story about it. He is a fiction writer, so I don't know if he fictionalized it or how he did it. Norman Lear bought it, bought the rights to it. And I don't know if it was actually produced as a play. But if it's Norman Lear, it's going to be kind of comedic. I mean, it could be dramedy, whatever.
Yeah.
But then it was produced into a TV movie, which makes me think of After School Special.
Yeah.
So if it's late 70s, early 80s, how did we not see this? I was watching every After School Special.
I wasn't that lame.
I was.
Yeah,
they were very informative.
No, sure.
But so anyway, I never saw it. I'm going to try to go look for it and see if I can find it. And it was written up as a book. I don't know if he wrote it or if somebody else wrote it, but it's called The Wave, and it has been translated into other languages, most notably German, and it is required reading for high school students in Germany.
Don't some people think that he exaggerated or made it up, but then they've gone back and talked to students at the time there. And I think there was even like one small local newspaper article that did mention to it, which kind of proved its contemporaneous authenticity after some people started questioning it in the 80s, I think.
Let me get back to the book. Okay. It's required reading in Germany. I said high school. I think it's actually more like middle school students. And some U.S. schools also have it as required reading. Our kids did not have to read
preschool
it.
Preschool in Germany.
They wouldn't have enjoyed it, they said. There's a documentary about it. I think you have to pay for it on Amazon, but I found it on YouTube, and it's called, I have it later in my notes, it's called The Lesson Plan. So I found it on YouTube.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
And so they interview students, some of the original students. Sherry's there.
Sherry.
Alyssa is there. Steve, the original kid.
How about
there.
Robert, the bodyguard?
No, I don't think Robert was there.
He's probably a little bit ashamed of himself.
You know what? Maybe
Robert
was there.
He probably went to
Vietnam
and died.
If Robert is the one that I was thinking about, because they give, like, at the end, they say what these people are doing now. If Robert is the one that I think it could be, he owns and runs like a 1,600-acre winery.
Really?
Somewhere. Yeah. So he's doing okay.
Go Robert.
A couple of them
a Nazi in high school, but that's cool, buddy.
Live in Southern California, and I don't know what they're doing. But the kid that started the whole thing, he's like a creative person, like an actor, and he does
Steve?
Does like Shakespeare stuff in Tahoe.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. And they name them. They get, you know, they
we should
their
go
last name
to Tahoe,
like
see a play of his, and at the end, just do the wave. That's all. Don't say anything. Just do it and see if he gets it.
I'll bet you people are doing that all the time.
Okay.
So he was never allowed to teach high school again, which was kind of sad for him because he loved the whole high school thing.
And so what did he do?
He said he went to San Francisco and he did teach something. I know he is
Satanism.
He was teaching poetry to special needs adults.
Okay.
But he's also an author and a playwright. And I guess he's doing okay. He and his wife lived in San Francisco for, 40 years or whatever. He came back to Cumberly High School for the first time in 2009 for the class of 1969's 40th reunion. So those would have been the kids.
The kids, yeah.
That were in that class. And there is footage of him, walking into an auditorium and there's all the kids. And, so it's the first time they've ever seen him since, because he never went back for anything. And they were allowed to ask questions and he would answer them. And so one of them asked him if would you ever do this kind of thing again? And he said, absolutely not. He acknowledged that it was a huge error. It was a big error by a young teacher, and it couldn't be done today, but he absolutely admitted that it was wrong even at the time. One man at the reunion said he was actually a reporter for the class or for the school newspaper at the time, and he had talked to the librarian about what was going on with the third wave, and he was writing an article about it. Well, the third wave kids found out about it, and he said two members of the car club came into the journalism room and, quote, knocked the breath out of him and told him not to write the article and scared him so bad.
This car club kids were thugs.
Yeah, he did not write that article.
Damn.
And Mr. Jones didn't know anything about that. That was the first time he heard about that. The kids,
were those car club kids at the reunion? Wait, no.
I don't know. Probably.
How about it, Rob and Todd?
Yeah.
Huh? Is that you? You know what you did.
About that. Sorry. Some said they thought it was the best lesson they were ever taught. The kids, or the now adult kids, that at least the ones that they talked to for this documentary, none of them expressed anything negative about it.
Yeah.
They thought it was a great lesson, and that it was the most important lesson they were ever taught. And they didn't have hard feelings about it. They thought it was one of the most important things in their life. So. And one man said that he feels like because he experienced that in high school, it would not happen to him again. So it could not happen to him again because he would be more aware.
Yeah.
Because of the feelings.
So what you're saying,
and
all
kind of
kids
stuff.
And all schools across the country should have a wave type. Okay. Yeah.
I would be interested. So obviously the kids that, or the kids, they're probably in their 50s, who participated in the documentary are all probably pretty politically liberal and, but
maybe,
it would be interesting to see how all of those kids turned out.
Yeah, I'm
like,
sure.
How did all the car club kids turn
some
out?
Some of those kids aren't going to talk to the documentary
because
they enjoyed it and they're sorry to see it go or something.
They were mad that it was fake.
Yeah, I know.
So
I wanted a uniform.
Some of the students put together a website, and it still exists today at I think the founder of it, his name is Mark Hancock, and it's called The Wave Institute, and it's thewave.com, and it's like a source for teachers, students, and media, and it's managed by several of the original students, and it's just information, and it's got some interesting stuff if you want to find out more about it.
How many surfers have been bitterly disappointed when they went to that website? A lot, I'm going to say.
So, do you want to know who really ransacked the room on
yes,
the third
I
night?
Yes, I do. Of course, no, I don't. Go ahead.
It wasn't Sherry.
Wasn't Sherry, no.
Hint, hint. It wasn't any one of the Breakers because the Breakers was not a real thing. It was the father of one of the students.
Wow.
He was a retired Air Force colonel who had spent time in a German prisoner of war camp. So you might imagine he had some feelings when he heard about what was going on. And he lost control. He broke in to the classroom and tore it apart. And Mr. Jones found him that morning, and he said he was just propped up against the classroom door, and he told Mr. Jones why he was there, what he had done, and he said that he had friends that had been killed in Germany, and he was shaking and, very upset, and, basically said, please understand, and, why I did this. Basically, don't rat me out, don't call the police. And so Mr. Jones called his wife and got a neighbor to help the man get home, which was nice. I would have felt like dirt if I was Mr. Jones.
Yeah, definitely.
I would have been profusely apologizing to him
exactly.
And saying, please don't rat me out. But he said they spent hours talking about it all. And I guess all's well that ends well.
Is it? Depends.
But that definitely probably concerned him, you know, concerned him about, okay, what am I going to do the rest of today? And then how am I going to fix this? And so that probably helped him decide what he was going to do on Friday.
And stop it. And
then, how he was going to do it and stop it.
For sure. Because this thing tomorrow.
He knew there had to be a conclusion.
Yeah.
He couldn't just stop it and say, oh, that's it. We're, you know, because then the kids who were really into it would, you know, he needed there to be some final resolution to the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, how that helped him decide what he was going to do.
Well, that's good.
Yes. But it's sad for that man.
Yes,
for what he had to go through.
Yeah.
I don't know what I would do if our kids came to me and said what was going on.
I would say, don't snitch.
I would say snitch.
Tell on, make sure you are one of the persons with the guns and ride the quest.
I would ride the crest of that wave
to the very top and then take over the country.
No. I would take them to the store and buy all of the poster and banner making materials.
Yes, you would.
We would not be able to get onto campus because campuses are locked down.
You'd listen to more angry female music on the way home to and from the Michaels Art Supply.
I would help them climb over the walls. No, I wouldn't help them break into the school, but we would paper the entire outside of the school.
There you go. There you go.
And I would help them.
Damn right you would.
I would probably also call newspapers and Channel 9 News.
Newspapers? I don't know.
Well, when our kids were in school, there were newspapers.
Okay. I'd call podcasters and bloggers.
I'd call the internet.
I would go on the YouTubes and the interwebs. So that is the story of the third wave.
Yes.
A fascinating study in, like, it's like sort of teaching. I mean, I think it is. It would sear you, and would be with you for the rest of your life.
Oh, yeah.
If you experienced that, went through that, and I think you would be much more aware of these things can happen, and here's how they happen, and you're lulled into these kinds of things with this sense of the in-group and the sense of the us versus them.
Yeah.
But they pretty much always end badly.
It's also surprising how more students didn't say, I know exactly what you're doing, Mr. Jones.
I was thinking whole time, I'm thinking, I'll bet you a lot of them knew exactly what he was doing. I would have known exactly what he was doing. Given the experience with the way he taught, I would have known for sure what he was doing.
And I think they might have, but it was still fun.
Oh, for sure.
It was still fun to go along with
it. I would have been a snitch.
And then, hey, we're all getting an A. Let's
I'm not saying I would have been a car club bodyguard type of thing, but I don't think I would have been a snitch. I think.
Would you have believed it when he said this is real?
No,
and it's going to be a 100% third not. Political party. No. But in the 60s, you know, it's easier to be more gullible because you don't know as much about everything.
I would have felt like I would have heard about that.
Yeah,
I don't know. Because I read newspapers and I just feel like I would have known about it. I don't think I would have believed that. But you know what? Still want to snitch.
Yeah. I don't know. Who knows? Teachers are authority figures. You know, kids believe them.
I've never been a big fan of figures, as you know.
I know.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you, Carrie.
You're welcome, Dean.
That was very illustrative. What? I don't know. It was very educational, too. And fascinating. And insightful.
Okay.
I'm gonna think of more. Okay. Until next time.
Thanks for listening. See you.